Part 1, Outward Bound. Chapter 1, An Old Enemy and a New Appeal. London, 10 days earlier, Monday, January the 3rd, 1898. From the upper gallery, Holmes and I had a clear view of Thomas Newman as the jurors filed into the courtroom. His close-set, pig-like eyes glittered with determination, and on his massive jaw, a purple bruise, caused by a solid punch from Holmes 2 months ago, had faded. I detested Newman. I had hoped to see some anxiety on his coarse features as he waited to learn whether the jurors would set him free or send him to the hangman. But to my disappointment, the leader of the East End gang, known as the Bleeders, sat stolid and impassive in the prisoner's dock. From time to time, however, Newman would glance up to the gallery opposite ours to wave in an oddly delicate manner to a veiled woman in the front row. I had been told the woman was Newman's wife. She sat quietly, as stoic in her appearance as her husband, though she never waved back. I'd seen most of the trial, and the veiled woman had occupied the same front row seat each time I had attended. The proceedings had been difficult for the prosecution. We had known Newman was guilty, of course, but proving it was another matter. Newman rarely soiled his hands with the face-battering and leg-breaking that were the usual enforcement techniques of his organization, preferring to let other thugs do the dirty work. Holmes and I had both been his intended victims 2 months earlier, so we had both been able to give what I thought was completely convincing testimony as to his guilt on the charge of attempted murder. But Lestrade wanted the death penalty. He had brought in 3 former Bleeders who had witnessed Newman, they said, in the act of ordering and overseeing several murders. They were now members of a rival gang on the south side of the Thames, and Newman's barrister had made much of that fact when attempting to impeach their credibility. Had he been successful? We would know the answer in the next few moments. The judge emerged from his chambers, moving slowly with an old man's careful step. His powdered wig, which no doubt had fit him properly at one time, was now too large for him and made him look older still. He spoke in a reedy tenor voice. "Will the defendant please rise?" Newman got to his feet. The judge continued. "Gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?"
"We have, Your Honour," said the jury foreman.
"Will you please read your verdict?"
"We find the defendant, Thomas Newman, guilty on all charges."
Newman never flinched. He might have been standing in a theatre queue, patiently waiting for a seat. He kept his jaw clamped shut and his chin tilted upward. His fists remained firmly clenched at his sides. The judge nodded. Turning his gaze to the dock, he continued. "Thomas Newman, you have been found guilty by a jury of your peers of 4 counts of willful murder. It is my duty to sentence you. The jury has not recommended mercy, and I have been told your associates have made every effort to influence the jurors in their deliberations, first with threats and then with bribes. Your associates are not on trial here, of course, but I can take their actions into account when passing sentence." A murmur went through the court. The judge rapped his gavel and the crowd grew silent once more. The judge spoke. "Have you anything to say before sentence is passed?" Newman did not look at the judge, nor at anyone else. His beady little eyes seemed to be staring at a fixed point in the air. Then he said,
"I'm not done yet."
The judge shook his head in irritation. "Do you mean that you wish to say more at this time, or are those words intended to convey some other meaning?" Newman said nothing. Holmes stared intently at the gallery opposite us, at the end of the row farthest from Newman's soon-to-be widow. He seemed to be watching an attractive blonde-haired young woman whose feathered hat was causing some annoyance to a man on the bench behind her. The young woman was repeatedly shifting the direction of her gaze, first to look down at Newman, then to look across at Holmes. The judge went on. "Very well.
You have had your opportunity to speak. Thomas Newman, I sentence you to be hanged from the neck until you are dead. Sentence to be carried out on the morning of January the 13th, 1 week and 2 days from today. The courtroom erupted in cheers. A short while later, we had left the Old Bailey and were walking away in the harsh January wind, looking for a cab, when a woman's voice came from behind us.
"Mr. Holmes, please wait."
Holmes stopped and turned. I recognised the young, blonde-haired woman we had seen across from us in the opposite gallery. She still wore her feathered hat. Her round, pleasant features widened in a glad smile of relief, and she spoke rapidly and urgently.
"Thank you for stopping, Mr. Holmes. You gave testimony at the trial several weeks ago, and I recognised you today. Please pardon me for staring at you so repeatedly back there in the courtroom. I fear I'm very much in need of your help. My name is Florence Janine, and I need you to find my fiancé."
"Miss Janine, I'm sorry to have to disappoint you."
But she interrupted him, her words spilling out in an even more desperate tumble, almost breathless with her anxiety to prevent Holmes from walking away.
"His name is John Swafford. He's a police detective, and he works at Limehouse Station, but none of the policemen there will speak with me. I've not seen him since Christmas. John was investigating that man, Thomas Newman. I came to the trial every day last month, hoping I would see him, but he wasn't there. And he wasn't there today either, or yesterday. Unless you saw him today and I missed him."
"Now, why should you think that, Miss Janine?"
"John said Thomas Newman had an escape plan, and more than enough money to bribe his jailers. He told me he was going to speak to you about it. He said you would want to know."